This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Tuesday, it's the 5th of March 2024. Coming up today, we're going to meet Christopher Patno from Google and talk all things Android. Yes, Android on Double Tap.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
And just for today, Sean Preece,
Yes.
Hang on a sec. Just blown the dust off my Google Pixel 8 Pro, so it's ready to go.
Someone's showing off for teacher. Not bringing an Apple.
No Apple, no. Don't bring an Apple for this teacher. He will not like it.
Oh, dear.
Yes, today we're going to hear from Christopher Patno from Google. Now, we actually spoke to him at Zero Project, and we're going to hear a number of the conversations we had, because we had so many conversations we couldn't fit into that week. But you're going to hear lots of those conversations over the next couple of weeks here on the show and also on YouTube as well. In fact, if you missed it last week, we posted a video with Shani Danda, who is the UK's most influential disabled person 2023. A title, my old job, of course.
No, it isn't. No, you're Stephen Bootalicious Scott.
According to Microsoft, yes. Microsoft who called me. I know that Hector might eat his words with this one, but Microsoft 2024 called me the most bootalicious and handsome.
Disabled person. Yeah.
Never mind the disabled person bit. Just keep handsome and bootalicious. Let's just leave it at that. I identify as handsome and bootalicious.
Anyway, you've dug your Pixel out of the tech drawer of doom, yes?
Yeah, well, mainly because, I should really start using it. I mean, honestly.
Because that review is coming.
Well, look, here's the thing, right? I mean, the problem is, and this is the reality for us, right? And I bought this with my own money. And, you know, I bought it because mainly for the watch, to be perfectly honest. I was more interested in the watch. First experiences of the watch were, I feel that's not the best way to do a review is to go into it with that attitude, Sean Preece. So I'm going to, start wearing the watch, start using it properly. That means putting my Apple Watch away, which doesn't really bother me too much because you and I both know how much we use our Apple Watches.
Yes.
So, but I think the problem is you've got to use the phone with it, right? You've got to kind of delve into that ecosystem a little bit.
I'm not even going to give you a hard time about that because barely had time to do something like that. Everything we've been doing recently, we've needed to be able to do things quickly and without learning a new system. So, you know what? I'm not going to give you a hard time because you're absolutely right. You want to spend some time on this and sort of live and breathe it for, a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it will take me a while, but I want to do it. And the reason that I don't want to rush it is because I'm not going to do that kind of review. And I saw an article on this on the Android, what's it called? Accessible Android website, which is a great website. And there was a blog post on there from someone saying, look, we've got to stop these reviews where people, try out Android for a week. And I actually agree with that. I think we've got to stop this because it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I don't use Android every day. And unless I decide to make a switch to Android, I'm never going to be able to get to grips with it the same way as I've got used to my iPhone because it's just not what I use every day. And it's not that one's worse than the other. I don't think Android is bad at all. I think Android is great. But what I'm going to do, and the way I'm going to do this is, I'm basically going to set my Google Pixel phone up with the same applications, log into everything, basically mirror what my iPhone has so that everything is equally as functional. And then what I want to do is over the course of a few days, just to get to grips with the phone using it and get into the habit of using it, actually, if I mirror it, then I can just pick it up and take it with me each day. Because, of course, the great thing now with eSIMs is you can just transfer the number across and you can just transfer your number from one phone to another. And then that you don't have to worry about, the old classic reason I wouldn't do a review like this was because swapping over numbers. It was like, oh, yeah, okay. But then actually I can just take the eSIM, swap it across. It's easy. So
I haven't used an eSIM yet. That's very posh of you. I'll be honest with you. I still struggle changing the SIM cards.
Oh, of course. It's horrible.
I find it really, tricky.
If you can find that little hole on the side where the SIM tray is,
yes,
I mean, you know, our fingers are tactile-ish, but you know.
Yeah.
Oh, stop with this licking nonsense.
You
this
always lick it. Wise. There's nothing wrong with... Embrace the lickage, Stephen Scott. The only thing is, it feels like I'm scrambling. Mr. F. I'm so sorry, Mr. F. You know what? Forget it. Move on.
Just forget it. Let's move on from that. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Google today, but we have other topics I want to bring up because, as usual, and as always, we get
emails. We get emails.
We do.
We get your email
every day.
Here's your mail today.
Hey. Also, just, I've got to say, huge thank you to our Laura for taking the time to read these over her weekend, by the way.
Yeah, applause. Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Laura.
Oh, sorry. Yes, hang on. I forgot I could do two things at once.
You, Laura, are a hero. I just want you to know that, and we love you. Thank you.
Everyone loves Laura. Yes. Everyone loves her reading the emails.
Is that a TV
show? You know what? What?
Wasn't that a TV show?
What was a TV show?
Everybody Loves Laura. Carry on.
Wasn't that Desmond?
No. God, we are terrible.
Wasn't there someone... There was a show. Oh, hang on. Everyone Loves... Raymond. That's what it was. Raymond.
Oh, yeah. That's
Desmond.
It's close to Laura.
It's close to Laura and Desmond, as you can think of.
Wow. It's like your granddad's hosting the show, isn't it?
I feel like my brain is just melting away. I say thank you to Laura, but actually, you know what? We can start by thanking Greg, because he has very kindly sent an audio message. So let's have a listen to this. He pre-ordered the Humane AI pin, which was quite interesting. And, he's got an update for us.
Hello, Stephen, Sean, Double Tappers. This is Greg from Phoenix, and I wanted to talk to you a bit about the Humane pin. Stephen, Sean, when I talked to you back in January, I was really excited because my wife had pre-ordered a Humane pin for me as a Christmas present. And I remember when I first heard about the Humane pin, I thought, oh, this is going to be absolutely wonderful for us blind folks. It's all audio. It's going to be great. And so, as I said, I was excited when she got me that as a Christmas present, and I decided to start emailing them and asking them some questions because I wanted to make sure that it was going to work for me. So I emailed and I asked if there was anything that I was not going to be able to do as a blind person. I remember that there is a video projector that comes from the pin and kind of projects an image onto your hand. And of course that, for a blind person, isn't going to work. And I had concerns that I might have to use that for certain functions. And so that's what I was asking. I asked the customer service person if there were any functions that I was going to need to use that video projector in order to do. And first email, he didn't completely understand what I was getting at, but as we emailed back and forth, he started telling me, well, unfortunately, you are going to need to use this to log in to the device in the first place. So each day, you know, or each time I pick it up and put it on my shirt or wherever you wear it, you need to log in, just like you do with the phone. And there apparently is no way to do that without using that projector function. I was skeptical. I wrote back and I said, hey, can you check and make sure with other people in your organization that this is true and that there's no way around this? Because I don't know if the person I was emailing was, you know, a new person or not terribly technical, so I wanted to make sure, and I asked him to check into it. And I ultimately, in one of my emails, I said, listen, I really, really want this product. I think it's going to be great. I think it could be super helpful for me as a blind person, but if you can't guarantee that I won't need to do functions without, you know, with sight, then I'm going to need to cancel my order. And he did write back and tell me that at this time, that is the case. So, long story short, I was really excited. Now I'm not so excited, and I ended up canceling. And I hope in the future they fix that. I hope they find a way to do that. But, you know, for $700 or plus a subscription cost each month, I didn't want to be the guinea pig. We will see. They're supposed to be released in March. We'll see if others have a success with it. But I just wanted to let you know that I ended up canceling and won't be able to demo that for the Double Tappers because I don't want to take that risk with that kind of money. So hope this is helpful, and hope you have a wonderful day. Keep up the great work. Bye now.
Thank you, Greg. That's very, very disappointing.
Is this breaking news? I mean, this is...
I think it must be, yeah. I mean, I've not heard this. And of course, we're getting to that point where these are starting to come out.
I'm not even convinced that these are even going to see the light of day now. I'm sorry, that's just not... Even the initial email where the customer service wasn't actually sure what Greg was talking about is really disappointing. And we were...
Nah, it doesn't surprise me. That part doesn't surprise me.
We were defending Humane at the beginning. We were saying, yeah, it's too early to tell about accessibility off a short, you know, however long the promo video was. But that is not great whatsoever. I'm really disappointed. Not just in the product. I'm disappointed in the company's response. I'll be honest. We've reached out and heard nothing.
Oh, yeah, we've reached out. We've heard nothing. We've not had any updates at all, and I think I'm starting to see why. Because if you can't have a product that's accessible, that if you can't even log into it,
yeah,
without someone having to set it up for you, that's no good. I'm sorry, in 2024, that is just not on. That's no use to anyone.
Yep.
And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to struggle with that, not just people who are blind. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to struggle with that. So that's something that would have to be corrected, and it could be easily corrected. I mean, if login and setup can be done via an app, then there'd be no issue there at all, right? What would be the need to worry about that?
Exactly.
Essentially, you could turn that function off and just talk to the device. I mean, there are other issues, of course, with our In Touch and Colin Hughes, who has been on with us a few times, and he mentioned this in his conversation as well. He was a little bit concerned around the way that this thing required physical touch in order for it to be activated. It's not something he will be able to do, so it's not going to work for him. You know, I mean, there's two ways to look at this, right? And I'll put this out to you guys. I could sit and rant for an hour on it, and maybe I'm feeling a bit chilled today. I don't know. Unusual for me. But, you know, I kind of want to put it to you guys because maybe I'm just tired. Maybe I'm just tired of these kind of excuses after excuses that come out every so often. And I feel that there's not a need to defend them, but I do feel the need to balance it a little bit in favor, I guess. Part of me feels, you know, that this is a stage one product. It's not going to be the only one of its kind. This Humane is not going to be the Apple iPhone of this kind of technology. Other companies will come along. And so I hope, and look, let's be honest about it, this is a bit like any other piece of tech. If another product comes out that is fully accessible, we'll jump on that bandwagon. And it's like, well, Humane, here's what you could have won. And that's one way to look at it. I think the company themselves haven't responded to us on questioning about accessibility. We don't really know where they are with it. I do feel it is still early in its production. I mean, like you say, it hasn't even seen the light of day yet. So let's see how this lays out. I mean, not every product that comes out is accessible, unfortunately. There are probably hundreds of products every single day that come out that are inaccessible. I could probably walk through a Best Buy and point to any dishwasher or cooker or air fryer that isn't accessible, and we don't jump up and down and leap up and down for that.
Different.
Why is it when it's a computer, you know, it
because it's
it should
a new
be accessible.
Category. That's why, because of the very nature of it, because it's a new category, promising so much about changing the way we use AI, we use technology. Because of that, to overlook this element of it is quite frankly, I think, terrible. for a company that seems to be positioning itself as a, you know, as a brand new modern age cutting edge tech company, I don't think this is good enough.
I think there's two things that come to mind. I think there's two reasons why people get so upset about these kind of products not being accessible, and this particular one not appearing to be accessible, at least in terms of that setup process that Greg talked about. And we haven't seen the conversation back and forth with Greg and Humane. He hasn't given us that, but
we should say that as well. Yes, we haven't been involved in that.
And Greg was getting involved from a customer perspective, but you know, arguably that's the best perspective to get, right? He was putting his money down for this, and you know, there wasn't a rush to get Greg's money off him when the announcement was made that, you know, this isn't going to work for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to take a little bit of this on faith from the information that Greg is giving us. I've no reason to doubt Greg's information. He's never let us down before. But, you know, we have to be real about this. We're not in these conversations. However, I think the fact that this product came from people who came from Apple has surprised people that, you know, accessibility wasn't something they could talk about right away or even respond to. But then I don't know if that's because of the part they played Apple. You know, does everybody at Apple, you know, I'm sure Apple would tell us that everyone at Apple's behind accessibility 100%, but can that really be true, honestly?
Yes,
can every
true.
Single person attest to that? I don't know. So I think you have to be careful there.
That's a fair point.
But also it's a computer, and I think because these days when we switch on an Apple computer, a Chromebook, a PC, we have accessibility on the very first few screens. It comes up and says, hey, you know, would you like a screen reader turned on? Would you, you know, want large text? Would you want accommodations for you and whatever you need? I think we're used to that now. So because we're used to that, we attribute that to any future product. And we should. We absolutely should. So don't think I'm defending anybody here. I'm not. What I'm saying is it should be accessible. If it's not, then I hope you're listening, Humane, because there's a group of people out here, I mentioned this on the show yesterday, 1.3 billion people in this world by 2050 will require assistive technology. 1.3 billion people. That's a huge market share. We're not all poor and penniless. We could buy a product if we want. Some of us get grants access and money access to buy these products. Some of these products even categorize or are classified as needed by the disabled community. So in some countries, it's paid for. And individuals can buy it. So I think
despite that, some of us have got enough money to buy it anyway.
Exactly, and want to buy it. So why are you shutting us out, would be my question. So, yeah.
Anyway,
I'm interested to hear what you guys think about this.
Deep breaths.
Get in touch. If any of you out there have tried to order one of these, or have gone through the process and maybe had a conversation, maybe more positive dialogue with Humane, let us know. We will, of course, keep on at them, as we would do. We will keep on at them and hopefully we'll get a response. And I don't want to be too adversarial about this. I know some people might want to jump up and down on their heads on this, and I don't want to do that because I don't think that's a way to solve the problem.
No, I agree.
If we want it to be accessible, we've got to work with the people, right? So you can call them out and we can shout up and down. That doesn't really solve anything.
No, you can still have a conversation, you know, talking about why we are disappointed. And
exactly.
They
and I think being respectful about that is important, because we're not going to get anywhere by screaming and shouting. Any conversation you've ever had in your life, and trust me, I'm Scottish, I have a lot of conversations where a lot of people are raising their voices. It's just a typical way of having dinner in this country. But no conversation that descends into a fight ever resolves anything. Just doesn't. So I'm not interested in that. But what I am interested in is a dialogue. So Humane, if you're listening, we'd love to talk to you.
Yes.
So let's move on. Camille got in touch and he wants to talk about the fruit company.
According to Sam from the Blind Life YouTube videos series, 95% of what the Apple Vision Pro is doing is vision driven. So if one is legally blind or worse, this device is not for you. He also mentioned that it may be useful in the future, of course. So, Stephen, I totally agree with you that now is not the time for people like us to invest in such a device. I also agree with Sean that adapting iOS to run on the Vision Pro is not that much of a stretch. Programming nowadays is modular, so modifying, say, VoiceOver to run on the Vision Pro would mean modifying it to run on the Vision Pro hardware. And finally, a while back, Stephen recommended the iPhone SE to those wanting to run iOS 17. I did so in order to be able to run the beta version of the OKO app. Moving all the apps and data from my iPhone 8 to the SE was super easy using iTunes. I plugged in the iPhone 8 and iTunes created an image backup. Once that was done, I plugged the SE and iTunes asked if I wanted to restore using the most recent backup. 30 minutes later, all the data was transferred. Now all I had to do was wait for the apps to download and install. What could be more simple? If you or one of the listeners has a more accessible and maybe simpler process, I wouldn't mind hearing about it. Thanks to Ms. Kay for reading out emails with such professionalism. Happy tapping, Camille.
Thank you, Camille. Glad it worked. And the migration between iPhone and iPhone is pretty seamless these days. It's a lot better than it ever used to be. I mean, the Mac has the same migration assistant built in, so you can easily move from one Mac to another. I know there's even an iPhone to Android and an iPhone, is it Android to iPhone as well? There's a way back and forward
as well.
If you want to.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I think even Mac to PC now is a thing. There's migration that way as well.
But I don't know how that would work.
Yeah.
It'd just be an absolute mess, wouldn't it?
I must say.
I'm sorry, says the PC. I've tried to install all these things and I have no idea what you're talking about. So goodbye.
Here's an alternative that doesn't work as well. Probably. I will say that the concept of transferring and migrating across phones is really great. It's really simple. But I've tried it a couple of times where it just seems to hang for hours if you're doing the wireless transfer. And you're never quite sure what's going on. But, I mean, when it does work, and it works, 90% of the time, it is so easy. Yeah, I agree. I think doing it through the computer, if you've got one to hand, is the best way to do it, though, through a cable.
Yeah, I haven't done that, though. I've always done it wireless to wire, from one phone to another. I mean, for a start, just the simplicity of it. I mean, the only thing is trying to line up that little weird thing that comes up on the screen.
Yes.
You've got to point your camera and take
annoying.
A picture of this thing.
Sometimes you can get it first time, and other times you could be there for 30 minutes just waving your phone around.
It's like being one of those self-checkouts, you've got to scan an item and it's like, yes. I mean, I'm just waving stuff around, hoping that something beeps. I will be honest, though, this is one of the joys of losing more vision, actually, is that I never have to touch a self-scanning machine again, because there's no point. I'm not going to get anything out of it.
I've never used one.
No, I did years ago when they first came out, and every so often it would say unexpected item in bagging area. And what I realized was very quickly, I was the unexpected item in bagging area. It was me.
No one expects Stephen Scott. Yes.
That's right. No one expects me to show up. I wasn't standing on the wrong place at the wrong, whatever it was. I don't know. Okay, Camille, glad that that's working out for you. Also, yes, on the Vision Pro front. Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to my point. I just don't think this is a product for us blind people. I just cannot imagine a day. And it's funny because you could say, well, hang on, what if Apple make it, it's a pair of glasses? And it's got, visuals to it that we can't use, but, it's in the form of a pair of glasses. Then, maybe arguably, because I suppose that's what my Meta Ray-Bans are. I mean, they don't have AR capabilities in them or any kind of visuals up front. Well, yet, exactly. But would that matter to me? Yes, that's where things get interesting. I think it is the form factor that's the problem for me. It's the style. I'm not going to walk around with that thing on my head. It's just too big. It's too heavy. It's pointless.
Yes.
And it's way too expensive. I am intrigued to see what Meta do, though. Meta are very interesting at the moment. Because this rumor that's going around of new, and it doesn't surprise me, Meta Connect, I think we'll probably see something new and different. And I think they're really ramping up because they've got the Meta AI. I'm hoping at Meta Connect this year they announce the AI to come out of the US and get into some other countries.
Oh, yes, I hope so. Yeah. That would be a game changer.
And then development on top of that. I mean, that sounds like a really interesting proposition. And it's funny because, when I talked to Karthik Karnan from Envision about this, it wasn't in my mind at the time, but I'm kind of thinking it now. You wonder if companies like Envision, I mean, I know they're doing a lot of work very specific to us or for us. So the product, like Envision glasses, for example, is... I actually find very similar in experience to the Meta Ray-Ban. I mean, it's responsive and it's the same, in terms of usage. I think it's good.
Yeah.
The only key difference being, of course, you can't connect your phone directly to them, so you're not getting voiceover through it, that kind of thing. So it's kind of standalone, which isn't a bad thing. I can live with that. But what I do find interesting is that the you could easily take what they've done at InVision and just put that into that Meta frames. But my concern for InVision is that Meta get there first, as in they just do it themselves. You know, why invest the time and money to bring something outside in when they can just essentially do the same thing in the glasses? I mean, if the AI can recognize something, if it can read a document, if it can read street signs, if it can give you navigation, then what would be the value of InVision? I don't know. I mean, yeah. It's a difficult one, right?
Again, look, it's
almost time to cannibalize, because AI cannibalizes itself.
It does. But again, a different way of achieving similar results, because let's not forget that, as you mentioned there, the InVision glasses are a standalone device. Doesn't matter if you've got your phone with you or not, as far as I know, right? The actual software runs on the glasses. Not the same with anything else we've seen so far, including the Meta Ray-Bans. Everything is run or sent to or processed by your smartphone. So there is a difference there, but does that matter for the end results, the end goal? Not entirely sure.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but you're right. I mean, that is one of the benefits of InVision. You can go out and you're kind of dealing with two separate things. Also, what's great is because it's running, even though it runs Android, well, it doesn't run Android, but it runs Google Wear OS or whatever it is. What is it, Wear OS? I can't remember.
I don't even know whatever what it is yet. No
idea. The Google Glass one. I can't remember what the OS is called. But that OS is built into the system. So if you've got an iPhone, say, you can have those and it runs fine, you know, because it's not they're not connected to each other.
No, that's right. It's like taking two phones out with you. Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it? I'm going to talk more about InVision in the next couple of weeks. I know some of you have been looking forward to me having a chat about this. I think now is the time, for more than one simple reason. The amount of work they've done on AI is really showing at the moment, and they're about to announce more features at CSUN. So it's definitely time to get excited about it and to sort of maybe talk about what it can do. And not just the glasses, by the way, but the app as well. Did you see, I don't know if you spotted this, but the InVision app is now available on the Blind Shell Classic as well.
Oh, no, I did not know that. Okay.
So they've just announced that, which is pretty cool, actually.
Why
so
do
if you've
think...
got a Blind Shell.
Sorry, I stepped over you there. Sorry.
No, that's just fine. I'm used to it.
No. Yeah,
it's I'm married. I'm used to being interrupted. It's fine.
Why do you think the InVision glasses haven't sort of rocked our world as much as, say, you know, the excitement over the Celeste glasses or anything else, or even the Meta Ray-Bans as we're talking about now? They've been out a while now. They're established. We know the software works well. So why is it that they haven't stormed through? Do you think it's purely down to the price point, you know, cutting a lot of people out of the story? Or is it something else? Is it the Google Glass? Is it the uncertainty about the hardware itself?
That's my answers. Yeah. I think it's exactly those two things. Yeah. I think price is one. Of course, price is part of it. If InVision came out with a subscription model similar to what Celeste is doing, I think a lot of people would take an interest in that. I think there's a lot of people hold back. But the other problem is, to just rewind for a second, you know, one thing with Celeste is, if they decide over at Celeste they want to change the hardware, you will get that hardware as part of your subscription. So you just send the old ones back, you get the new ones in the post, that's it. So you get the latest hardware. Now with InVision glasses, although there's no talk of changing anything as yet, and let's see what happens at CSUN, because I think we'll get more information, more details then. Although I did ask the question about hardware, and I got the impression there wasn't going to be a hardware announcement at CSUN, but we'll wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll wait and see. But my take would be there, even now, people are a bit nervous about buying it because it's 2019 hardware that is now discontinued.
Yes.
Now, I know that everyone gets annoyed, especially at InVision, when I say that, because it's like, yeah, but it still works really well and we're still developing for it and we're getting a lot out of it. And absolutely, they are wringing that sponge like you wouldn't believe. They have got so much out of this thing. And I actually am really impressed, genuinely impressed at what they've managed to achieve with this hardware. And I think it's actually quite unique in some ways that, you know, you've got this hardware from almost 5 years ago, or at least being discontinued from 5 years ago, that is still working just as well today, and if not better, than anything else on the market. It kind of blows me away. Why has nothing else come along to replace this in all these years?
Yeah, well, that's my point. There is nothing like the Google Glass. There's not a standalone wearable pair of glasses.
But that's the problem. because nothing else has come along, and because of the distance, the time since this last edition came out, it maybe feels like this is not the time to buy. It's like buying an iPhone in August. You know, yes, it's like, this is a good time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think that might be putting people off, but I do think the price, I think if they were, I haven't any information on this, I'm just putting this out here, but I would imagine that the decision not to go down the subscription route for Envision Glass is because of the lack of available units left. I mean, they'll have a number left, but really? They won't have tons. Well, you know, they're not going to have hundreds and millions of these things in a cupboard, right? I mean, they're going to have a finite amount because there's only so many left. And if they brought out a subscription model, I think it'd be quite popular, but they may run out too quick, and that would be a problem because then you can't fulfill demand, and that's worse. That's my take on it.
Scale and demand, it could well be. Could well be.
Until you get something else, whether it's a Celeste or whether it's working with Meta. I mean, the thing is, and I want to be very, I've got to be very fair here to Envision, because these guys are doing great work, but the important thing to remember here is these guys are software developers. They're not hardware developers. So the hardware is a benefit, but it's not what their aim is. Their aim is the software. So they're not wedded to Google Glass, and they've made that very clear to us over the years. They're not wedded to it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we are wedded to it because we're spending so much money on it. That's the bit that I think sometimes there's a disconnect between them and us a little bit. We are wedded to it because you think, well, I've spent all this money on this thing. I want it to work.
That's just because it's the thing that we all want, or do we? Is that something we're just putting forward? But I think so. It's the thing that we want, that wearable glasses that can do the same things, Ira, Be My Eyes, or whatever it is. That's what we want.
I think everything about Envision is great. The app is great, and I think that the option on Glass is brilliant as well. The one thing, and this is down to Google, nothing to do with Envision, but what would make it perfect is if it had GPS capability in those glasses. Because if you had GPS capability in there, Ira would be way better.
Yes.
The fact for me is I still have to pull my phone out and use the phone as opposed to the glasses. And that makes me think, well, why am I wearing the glasses?
Yes, I agree.
So that's the problem for me. That's not an Envision problem. Got to be fair here. That's not their issue. That is to do with Google. But Google aren't going to change that because the product's finished. And this is where we kind of have this awkward moment. It feels like there's a vacuum at the moment. Something has to get into that vacuum to fill it. And I don't know what it is.
No, me either.
I'll be interested to see what comes, though, in the next few weeks when we get to see Sun. I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. I hope there's more to come on this. I really do. Look, we've got to take a break. But coming up, we're going to hear from Chris Patno. He is from Google. He's going to join us next. And he's not joining us next because we spoke to him already. But he will be on air with us next. Let's put it that way. As we spoke to him at Zero Project Conference. That conversation next.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Okay, so while we were at Zero Project Conference in Vienna, we get the chance to sit down with Christopher Patno from Google. Christopher, thank you so much for coming back on to Double Tap.
My pleasure.
It's nice to see you here.
Well, especially these fancy glasses you got, man.
Yeah, come in a bit. So,
I feel like the family.
Yeah, exactly. It's
come
nice to,
closer.
Yeah, exactly. You haven't been listening to the show recently, have you?
I'm sorry, I haven't.
That's good. So let's just skip past some of that.
Quickly skip on.
So what is it? What is it?
Well, you know me and Android. I try, and I, as you know, I'm an iPhone guy.
Yeah.
Do you hold this against me?
Not often. Not often. No, I don't.
No.
No, not a bit.
Okay, that's good. Listen, I want to ask you what's new, because there's so much going on. I mean, I want to talk about accessibility, but I really got to ask you about Gemini.
Sure.
Because to me, and I'm really interested in your take on this, because I feel AI is a new route to accessibility for all of us. Do you think that?
I think it's a really interesting and powerful tool that allows things to happen that we wouldn't been able to do at scale before.
Mm.
So, for example, you look in Google Chrome, and Google Chrome has the Get Image Description function. We've been using AI for accessibility for people with VI for years and years.
Yeah.
But what's really neat about these new generative AI models is that it's a new way of thinking. It's a new way of providing information. So you can do a richer description. So you can make it better. But I have to say, we need to be really careful, especially when it comes to accessibility use cases, because hallucination is real. And we want to be thoughtful in terms of when you're, for example, creating an alt text. If you make us say 1,000 words, and I'm not saying Gemini, I mean the Gen AI, there is a risk of hallucination, and they could misrepresent what's actually there. I saw a demo yesterday where someone showed up a picture, and they described the genders of the people. And wow. My first question is, well, how do you know? You can't tell someone's gender just by looking at it, can you?
That's a little bit dangerous these days.
So we want to be careful in terms of the uses. So especially when it comes to providing information to someone who's blind, if you make an assumption because of what something looks like without a lot of testing, you could go down the wrong path. And I'm glad that Google's been a little more conservative in terms of how we approach these ethics issues.
That's exactly what I was going to say, actually, the word conservative. Because being Google, obviously, the kings of the search engine and more, people were just assuming that you would be first out of the gate with the AI services that we've seen so far. And yet, as you mentioned, being a little bit hesitant, and the hallucinations issue does seem something you're particularly wary of. For good reason, I understand, but when you see other companies, I mean, you know, we're talking about the various improvements that we see through ChatGPT, for example, and the new, is it called Sora video?
Video. AI. Text to video
features and capabilities. I mean, they seem to be just throwing out feature after feature after feature. Are you not worried at all that Google may be being left behind?
This is really beyond my pay grade, but to talk about such things. But what I can say is we invented the Tensformer technology that everything else is based off. So we have a lot of experience in this space. And in 2018, we published our AI principles, describing how we want to go about and how we want to think about the creation of our AI technologies and how they're to be used. So yes, we are being conservative because we appreciate the value and impact that it can have. ChatGPT is an excellent product. They do excellent work. And I'm not going to do any get your gun, anything you can do, I can do better, because that doesn't help. The fact is, it's early days. We all have similar technologies, and we all do things differently. And some of it's better for some of it's better for others. But I think it is wise and prudent for us to be cautious as we move these things out, because we want to make sure that they were designed ethically, make sure that the data is accurate and representative. I remember a couple months ago reading about a Midjourney experiment where someone said, provide me pictures of people with autism. And there was like 100 images of sallow white boys in black hoodies, picture after picture. This is not okay. And if we go too fast, this is what we're going to represent, because there isn't time to do the thoughtful deliberation.
I'm with you on this. I think it's important to take the time. And I think that we'll look back in history and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, others rushed too quickly. And maybe it was important we slowed down a bit.
So this is always the question, and only history can tell who is right. Yeah. But at this time, I'm proud of the work that we've done. Mm-hmm. We're not perfect, but I think we're trying to come at this from a prudent perspective, where we want to provide the most help for the most people. And in particular, when it comes to accessibility tools, when it is someone's interpretation of what they can't see for VI or what they can't hear with captions, we want it to be right, and we want it to be ethical, and we want it to be fair.
But it's interesting with accessibility, because with AI, it feels like it's been unleashed. You know, it's like a tsunami, a good tsunami, flooding the villages of tech. Is this useful?
That is a terrible analogy.
That's a terrible analogy. Okay, fine. We'll think of something else.
Well, just think of all of the power problems you'd have with water over the mains.
Okay, it's a bad idea, right? But you get where I'm going with this, right?
Why?
I think, in a way, it's kind of done the same for accessibility. It's kind of unleashed it from the box it's in, because for a long time accessibility was within its world. You know, even on a smartphone, right? You pick up an Android phone, you pick up an iPhone, there's an accessibility section. Mm-hmm. You go in there to get tools. Whereas now with AI, a lot of those tools in AI and coming through Gemini or through OpenAI, whatever it is actually kind of making it possible to do things, even simple things. I mean, I'll give you an example for me. I use OpenAI or ChatGPT whenever I send an email because I want to make sure my grammar's correct. I want to make sure my spelling's correct. Mm. I want to, you know, do those things because as much as I listen to my audio, I want it to be right. I want it to be correct if I'm sending a professional email. So it's things like that that I do and I can use, and it that becomes an accessibility tool for me.
The technology, again, it's profound, it's powerful, and we're just at the beginning days of seeing where it's going to go. What I find really interesting, for example, is looking at what Google Chrome OS can do when it comes to PDFs.
Yes.
It can contextually understand the PDF. Yeah, and it's not just as an OCR. You have scribbles and letters. It actually understands contextually what the sections are, so it can do a proper sort of DOM model description of what the PDF is. So you have a real context of it. That's AI. It doesn't have to be ChatGPT or Gemini or Gemma or whatever. The AI has been around for a really long time, but now people think of it as the solution. What actually is, it's the tool. I mean, you take a look at what we did in the Super Bowl. I don't know if you saw the video. It's really meaningful. And even in the BTS, we had the community. We had a blind director. Stevie Wonder did the intro. We had people of the community on both sides of the camera. That representation in when creating these tools is what's really important, or commercials as the case may be. But for example, what it was demonstrating was a tool that when TalkBack is on the Pixel 8, it'll give you spoken guidance on how to frame a picture in a good way. I use this for every single tour I do at the Accessibility Discovery Center, and I say 4 times out of 5, someone says, "Oh God, I wish I could have that too. Can I do that?" And they say, "No, you have to be blind." And I think this is one of these tools that, like so many, starts off as a disability tool, becomes mainstreamed, becomes a curb cut. I would not be surprised. You know, this is not any kind of disclosure. This is Christopher dreaming that this becomes something that a regular camera could have because people are asking for it. And I think it would be a really neat thing for us to consider.
Well, if you want inclusion, that's what inclusion is. It's everybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. We talk about AI like it's a brand new thing, but you're absolutely right. It's been around in some form or other for years and years and years. But there is a lot of excitement about it, particularly in our community about accessibility. It's almost, I see it almost like the smart speaker, where it's accessible just by its very nature.
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. A lot of friends of mine who were deaf thought it was a doorstop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but then you've got the ones with the screens where you can type to them as well.
Yes.
You've got various
different
features.
So it evolved into something that's more inclusive.
Yes, yes, exactly. But that's where we're seeing AI, or that's where we're envisioning AI to be, almost like the ultimate interface, almost. Understanding context is key when it comes to accessibility and what we're trying to achieve, I guess.
And that's why I'm so excited about it. I don't want to sound like a doom and gloomer,
no.
but it's important that we be thoughtful in terms of how we develop it so we can have the results that we want. We want to provide access for everyone. What they're saying here at ZeroCon was zero barriers.
Yeah.
But they have to be right, and they have to be thoughtfully designed, and they have to be as accurate as we can get, because people depend on it. And then we do have the AI that's been around since like 2008, when Google started doing automatic captions. So we've been doing AI and accessibility for almost 17 years now. So it's been around for a long time.
And it's got to be right. It's got to be inclusive to all. And like you say, picking up on that point about the smart speaker, you know, instantly we in the blind community go, oh, wow, amazing. As you say, then someone who's deaf says, yeah, but what about me? So, you know, it has to be inclusive to all. And that's obviously something you guys work at, all these tech companies now. Well, I say all tech companies. I say the
big tech companies
focus on it, I think I'd fairly say. I want to ask you a bit more sort of brass tack stuff, because one issue that still comes up is the Braille HID issue, the human interface device issue with Android phones and other devices using Braille displays over Bluetooth. How are we getting on with that? Any progress there?
Can't really talk about that right now.
Okay.
But I know we've been collaborating with the community. We've been collaborating with the manufacturers. So we're aware of an issue, but we still have the RFCOM connection. So as long as the manufacturer doesn't only support that model, that, and I think there's only been like one model that did this.
That's right, yeah. You can still connect by USB.
So you can still do USB, or you could use the RFCOM. So as this work continues, no one should be left behind as long as you have these other options. So, yes, the work is important. Yes, the work is underway. But this is something that we want to continue to improve on. It's not an easy thing to do, and we want to do it right. But again, we don't think we're leaving anyone behind because there are these other options.
Tell me, what are the headlines at the moment in your world and Google accessibility? What's the one thing you're talking about most that's new, that's exciting, that people might not know about that's new in Google accessibility?
Unfortunately, there's so much that gets pushed through that people don't know about because it sometimes it feels like you're talking into the void.
Listening is
a two-way conversation. Mm-hmm. Someone has to be actively listening to be able to hear it. So I don't want to answer this question because of course I'm going to say AI and all the great things about AI. Mm-hmm. But what I want to talk about though is really a question to you. How can we learn to share all the cool stuff that we have and have it be heard? We've been doing like videos and we're doing quarterly newsletters, but this is a really interesting question, and I'd love to talk with you more.
So I'm getting the impression from what you're saying is that you feel that you're putting out a lot of information, but it's not being heard or picked up.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the community? Are you talking to everybody? Or?
Here's an example. When I had the RNID, the Royal National Institute of the Deaf, come into the ADC before we were open, and I showed that one of the lead technical folks live transcribe. It's an Android application that real-time transcription in 80 different languages. He'd never heard of it. And this is his job.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, we as Google, we tend to talk to the journals and we'll partner with advocacy organizations and charities and the like. But if you say something out into the world and people aren't listening, it might not have been said. So what I think is a really interesting question, not is what is the new cool thing that exists, because there's always going to be something new. What's a really interesting question is how can we all learn to communicate better, whether it's the Googles, Microsofts, Apples, Metas, or whatever. How can we all communicate better so that it gets understood? That's a really hard question, and AI can't solve that.
No,
I'll ask it. But no, probably right. And you're not the only person to put that question to us, actually. We've heard that many, many times. How do you reach people? We've asked the same question. Because a lot of the time, the way we reach people through podcast or radio, it's very much, well, what if someone hasn't got access to that technology? We all know someone who's, you know, suddenly become disabled, say, and then suddenly feel like they don't want to do anything. How do you reach someone like that to say there's things out there to help? Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. It's multi-layered.
I think there's a big issue with media as well. Tech media tends to pick up on the big stories, the big headlines. It doesn't focus in on the accessibility tools unless the other thing is quirky, or it's AI, or it's, you know, they're not going to get into the weeds on what is new in Lookout, right? Which is kind of annoying because that's what I want to know about.
Yeah,
I think also part of it is. And maybe this is time. Maybe it's like we just talked about, when accessibility floods the market in the way that AI does, and it's no longer a locked box. Hmm. That's when other people might realize, well, if I can use this. I actually had someone, this is God's honest truth, I was on a train going from Glasgow to London, and there was a woman sitting across from me, and she was struggling to read her phone. She had an Android phone, and she was struggling to read it. And I said, okay, what to do is go into accessibility, and she said to me, I can't go in there. That's not for me.
Exactly.
And I'm like, it's not a locked door. You don't need a key to get in.
And there's no stigma.
No. And once she did it, she's like, that has changed everything. Mm. I can see my phone now. It was just a little change like that, but it made a huge difference to her. She didn't even know the feature existed. She didn't even know that she could use the feature. She was aware of the accessibility button.
But not allowed
didn't,
in.
Didn't want to touch it.
Yeah.
And there's actually a really neat startup coming out of the U.S. where they're partnering with education institutions and libraries, and they have an application, a utility that sort of makes like a Mac computer or a Windows computer like Chrome OS. Chrome OS has the ability to, you can log in and it sort of logs in all of your accessibility settings no matter what machine you log into. Well, they're building a tool that does this for Windows and does this for Macs in a library context. And they'll when you log in, it'll download your screen reader or download your magnifier and set the settings as you want it to be. And when you log out, it deletes it. When you log into a different library computer, it loads everything up for you within seconds to minutes. So what they learned in the research, though, and it comes out of a university, people didn't, they were afraid of the accessibility. They didn't know what questions to ask, and they didn't know what the features were. So again, this awareness that I talked about in terms of the new features is also the features that exist today.
Yeah.
And they're spread around in different settings. Some are a display control panel or accessibility control panel or preference pane. It's way too hard to know what you need to do. And this, for me, this is more than a new feature. If we could solve this, this could really change the lives of people all over the world if we can make it easier for them to know how to use the technology they have today.
You say that AI can't solve this. I actually think it could, because in some ways, if you can say to your computer, I can't read the text on this, can you do anything? And it can just make the text size bigger, or you know, change color contrast, or do things to suit the person.
Yeah.
Maybe that is part of the solution. That, I don't know.
That's an interesting idea, and I think you're right. A utility, AI based or not, could be really helpful in exposing these things.
You'll be pleased to hear. I know you need to go, so I'm going to tell you one final thing. I have purchased with my own money a Google 8 Pixel Pro and a Google Pixel Watch 2. So I am on I'm on the bus.
Right on. Welcome. The water's fine.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Great to see you guys again. Thank you.
I'm on the bus. I'm on the village, traveling through the tsunami-ridden village.
Unbelievable.
I think there's a lot of mixed metaphors going on there. If I even knew what that meant, I'd be impressed. You know, I've got to say, first off, thank you to Christopher coming on and being so frank and open and honest with us, as he always is. But this time around there was something different. I got a sense of something different this time. I got a sense of frustration from him.
Yes.
In particular around this subject of how do we get people to know about these tools. And he cited that example of that one particular organization. I do have the answer to this, I think.
That we're not going to like. Yes, you teased us yesterday, so I'm going to sit back and be educated.
I don't think you should go that far.
Okay.
I think we may set those expectations a little bit. No, look, I think it's actually really simple. And when I say it, you'll go, oh, really? Which is employ more disabled people.
Oh, really?
And
yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? There is a huge difference in having someone in an organization, say at the top of an organization, any organization who is disabled, they will have a very different relationship with the technology relevant to their community than someone who isn't disabled. Simple as that. And it amazes me that I say this, and in our world, in our blind world, we'll say, well, that makes total sense. Of course that makes sense. Of course someone who's blind that runs a blind charity, for example, would, you know, have more interest in technology or services that would help that individual because they probably use that technology and use those services. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to resonate as much as I would like it to in the real world. You know, there are still many organizations for disabled people run by people who are not disabled. Way too many.
Yes.
Way too many. And it's still a problem. And, you know, there are lots of people who will happily sit in the C-suite in charities or organizations or companies and wax on about how they want more disabled people to work there. And how one day when I leave, you know, a disabled person will take charge. You know what? It's time for one of you to stand up and walk out the door. Time for one of you to actually build a succession plan that gets a disabled person into that role and makes it happen. Don't just say you're going to do it. Actually act upon it. Do something. Stand up and say, do you know, I'm getting out of the way. Because this is so common across all everything, frankly.
Yes.
You know, loads of people who will always say, well, I mean, of course we'd love more women CEOs, but, you know, okay, well, do you know what? If you'd love it, why don't you go out of the way of one? Give someone a chance. Make sure that person's employed. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second we just let anybody in. Of course the person has to be qualified and be capable.
Yes.
But what, you're telling me there's not a single disabled person or a single woman or a single black person who's capable of doing that job? Are you serious? Is that what you're telling me? Because I don't believe you.
Well, we. Yeah,
I think there's plenty of people. I think they're looked over.
True. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's not even the CEO. I mean, further down, you start to look at these organisations and look at the numbers when it comes to disabled people working there, especially in these particular in disabled organisations themselves. It's not good. I think you're absolutely right.
It's dreadful. It is dreadful, and it's continuing to be dreadful. And I think this is where, you know, we come to this from the UK perspective, because we're used to organisations that are for us.
Yes.
Not of or by us. They are for us. And some will say they are of us, but they're not. They're for. Because their management structure, their people who are in charge, the people who are making the decisions, they are not blind or they are not disabled. And I'm sorry, it's not good enough. In 2024, it is not good enough. And it's got to change, because that is how you start getting people interested. Because if someone goes into, I mean, if I go into Google's building, for example, and sit down with Chris, there's no doubt things I'll learn, things I won't know, things I will learn all about with Android and Google and all the wonderful services and all the rest of it and everything that Chris does. But, you know, if he turned around and said to me, hey, what's this, you've seen this live transcribe, I'd be like, sure, of course, sounds amazing. Because I'm in that world.
Yeah.
It's not just because I'm a tech guy. I used to hear this all the time from people. Ah, but you know, you're into your tech. That's not it. That's not it, guys. It's because I'm part of the world that needs this stuff, that uses this stuff. So of course it's of interest to me. So if you had someone who's blind at the top of an organization for blind people, let's say, they're going to know about this stuff. It's not foreign to them.
Yep.
It's not for other people. It's for them. It's for their group. It's for their people. They understand it. And I think that's, you know, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, of course, it's about getting more disabled people through the door of any organisation, irrespective.
Not just at the top, but all the way through.
But it actually has to be at the top now. I'm sorry. It just has to be. And I think we're going to have to start doing it the other way. Got to start at the top and work our way down through the yes. ranks.
Yeah.
They've got it.
Well, it would change the direction and the thinking and the whole way the organisation thinks.
Because the person at charge might say, so how many disabled people have we got on the staff? It's not good enough. Fix it. Make it better. Let's get more people in. Let's think about apprenticeships. Let's think about ways to get people in. Oh, well, you know, we put out a request for more people to come out, you know, and take a job. But, you know, we only got 3 people and they weren't qualified. Okay, well, what are you doing to sort that out?
Yeah.
What about apprenticeships? What? Exactly. Yes. All the ways to do. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
That's a whole new episode. I totally agree. Fantastic. You're right, Stephen.
Thank you so much, as always. Thanks to Christopher for being with us. And that's it. We're out of time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Hi, I'm Ramya Amuthan. Join me weekly for AMI Audiobook Review, the podcast that explores new titles, introduces us to famous narrators, and updates what's hot at the Center for Equitable Library Access. Download episodes of AMI Audiobook Review from your favorite podcast provider.